The Islamic Connection is the name of this lecture, and it's quite a story. The Islamic religion is huge today, and it has some very fascinating features. It's a very exclusive religion. Nobody from the outside is allowed in. If there are pilgrimages to Mecca, only those of the Islamic faith are allowed to go to these pilgrimages. It is an exclusive religion. Evangelism in Islamic countries is totally forbidden. This religion has full control of the entire territory which it controls. Now, who and what is Islam? Millions of people make the pilgrimages to Mecca, where they worship at the shrine of Muhammad. What a privilege it is for them to make the pilgrimage. There's another religion which also propagates pilgrimages, and that is Catholicism. So you have pilgrimages to Lourdes and the Marian sites and to Fatima. Pilgrimage is a symbol of the great pagan religions of the past as well. Now, who was Muhammad? Muhammad Mustafa was born in 570 AD and he died in 632 AD. He fled to Medina in 622 AD after Khadija's death. Now, who was Khadija? Muhammad married Khadija when he was 25 and she was 40 years old. Her cousin, Varakwa, was a Roman Catholic and she came from a Roman Catholic convent. So we could say she was a Roman Catholic nun. She was super rich, she lived in a convent, and she had the whole of the economy, basically, in her hand, and she employed this young man, Muhammad, whom she then also married. Muhammad marched on Mecca in 630 AD, 2 years before he died, and 4 years before Umar became caliph, and the Quran was compiled in 650 AD, and Muhammad, who couldn't write himself, had a scribe to write down what he saw and what he heard. And the Quran is different, apparently, from all other religious writings because it was a directly dictated book. So it is not just transcribed by a prophet, so they teach, but is the very word of God, and therefore it must always remain in its original Arabic language. That is what is taught in the Islamic religion. The symbol of Islam is the sickle moon and the star. The star within the sickle moon. Now, where does this symbol come from? And who is Allah? Well, let's go to some interesting quotes, also from encyclopedias of religion and etc. Allah, he was the moon god who married the sun goddess. Together they produced three goddesses who were called the daughters of Allah. These three goddesses were called Alat, Al-Uzza, and Manat. The Encyclopedia of Religion mentions that Allah is a pre-Islamic name corresponding to the Babylonian Bel. Fascinating. So this is an ancient pagan religion, and Bel or Baal is the deity. We read in Morals and Dogma, page 451, the Arabian word Aldebaran means the foremost or leading star, and it could only have been so named when it did precede or lead all others. The year then opened with the sun in Taurus, and the multitude of ancient sculptures, both in Assyria and Egypt, wherein the bull appears with lunette or crescent horns and the disk of the sun between them, are direct allusions to important festivals of the first new moon of the year, and there was everywhere an annual celebration of the festival of the first new moon when the year opened with Sol, the sun, and Luna, the moon, in Taurus. And the symbol of Taurus is that one over there. The crescent and disc combined always represent the conjunctive sun and moon. That means basically the male-female deity. Adoration of a celestial cow, Mehet Veret, there's the all-seeing eye, the eye of Osiris. Here are the horns, there is the disc in the horns, and it also represented the plunging of the sun god into the womb of the mother to be born by Isis. So the horns are also a representation of the moon, the sickle moon. So in later religions, or from Babylon itself, Assyrian style, there you have the half moon with a solar disk in it. And the same over here, enlarged. Note that this is Baal Hadad, the birth of the sun. If we go to Mesopotamia, we'll find the old symbol of Baal and Bel was exactly the same, the half moon and the star in it, representing the birth of the sun. Isis and Osiris, the male-female aspect. So this would be Ashtoreth and Tammuz, or Isis and Horus, the male-female. The same you find in Egyptian, as we have already discussed it. This is Baal worship, this is Lucifer worship in his male-female form. Now, the papacy has exactly the same thing, because the Pope is today the representative of the Babylonian religion. So when he says the Mass, he has a round wafer disc, its roundness coming as a symbol of Baal. And after a Mass, it is placed in a monstrance, which is a half moon. So then you have the birth of the sun, and you have it symbolized in this form. Here's another monstrance in which the host is placed, representing the birth of the sun. So Catholicism uses the symbol of the half moon with the sun or the star in it. Here's a Roman Catholic church in Germany, and it has this interesting clock on it, which I photographed. There's the moon, and there is the star. And this particular star here has 8 points. And as this clock moves round, of course, every time, the long arm and the short arm intercalate, you have the birth of the sun god. Baal Hadad, Baal Hadad, Baal Hadad, every now and then, every hour of the day. Very interesting. So the symbol of Catholicism is the moon and the star, hidden, of course, in many other symbols as well. Now, this ancient religion existed before Islam. And the initiates of this religion, as we saw in Morals and Dogma, were the insiders, like Origen, for example, and the Bishop of Alexandria. These were the initiates who harbored the ancient religion. And they were Christian, so-called, but of course they were not Christian. They just propagated that for the Goyim, Catholicism. True Christianity, they fought tooth and nail and tried to eradicate, and they tried to eradicate the Word of God, as we saw, by changing it. Now, Islam arrived on the scene way after that. So the true harborers were in Christianity before they were in Islam, and they were in two places, Alexandria and Rome. Alexandria was eventually taken over by Christianity, and the bastion, the great library, was destroyed, and the final seat of the occult knowledge was in Rome. So Rome is the seat of the ancient occult knowledge, before Islam even appeared on the scene. That is the fact. And this ancient occultism had a potent enemy. Who was that enemy? Christianity. Christianity was growing in the place where the disciples had taught it. Christianity was growing in the heartland of the Middle East, Asia Minor, all the way up to India, the Bible says, into the north of Africa. That is where true Christian doctrine prevailed. They kept the Sabbath. Only Alexandria and Rome did not keep the Sabbath. Alexandria soon disappeared as a seat, and then the Sabbath was not kept in Rome. Very interesting history. So the symbol that Catholicism uses is the star and the sickle moon, and this star, by the way, is exactly the same star as is used in Islam. Isn't that interesting? I wonder who gave rise to whom. Obviously, the one who is first can only give rise to the one who comes second, and not the one second give rise to the one who comes first. Isn't that correct? We think about it. So, in Catholicism, we find the half moon or the sickle moon, where the deity is in them. We find Mary, replacing Jesus Christ as the mediatrix of all graces, the mediator, the sole mediator and advocate is replaced by Mary. So here in this Roman Catholic monastery, Christ puts the crown of thorns onto Mary and she has the holes in her hands. Mary is always depicted as coming out of a cave. Now the ancient deities always came out of a cave. Loyola, the Jesuit, received all his information in a cave, and it is interesting that Muhammad received all of his information in a cave. That's paganism. That has nothing to do with Christianity. Now here we see in Islamic countries, in this particular one over here, we have this strange structure over here, and we have a statue of Mary on top of it. And Mary there appeared, apparently, as this little gazelle. But before the king shot it, it changed into Mary, and she told him to build a monastery. And that she did, or that he did, and there is the monastery, high up on a hill. Now, whenever I find a monastery high up on a hill, I'm very interested, because high hills were pagan high places where they sacrificed to pagan deities. It is interesting that all the cathedrals in the world are built on pagan places of worship. Even the Vatican is built on a pagan site of worship. Nothing has changed. So when I came to this particular place in the Middle East, I went to look for the ancient place of worship, and sure enough, on the hill, there it is, the triple arches of the ancient deity of sacrifice in the cave, as per usual. It's interesting that Mary always appears in the cave, in Fatima she's in the cave, in Lourdes she's in the cave, the Pope is always visiting the cave and worshipping in the cave. As Osiris represented the sun in Egyptian law, Isis represented the moon, but the truth is that Osiris represented the male active generative powers of nature, while Isis represented the female passive or prolific powers. That's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry. So it's actually a form of nature worship. These people would do well in the Bohemian Grove, worshipping the trees. The Templar revelation identifies Isis as the Black Madonna on no less authority than a former head of the Priory of Zion. The Black Madonna cult is central to the Priory of Zion. To them, at least, there is no doubt about the significance of the Black Madonna. You see, Osiris was both black and he was white. And he's worshipped as black and he is worshipped as white. Mary is worshipped as a Black Madonna and as a white Madonna. So we have all these interesting nuances. The Hittites used the symbol of the half moon and the solar deity. This symbol today, of course, is used by none other than the United Nations. Well, let us travel to an Islamic country today. Here is a Catholic cathedral in Amman. And I'm photographing this Catholic cathedral standing at the mosque. So I'm standing on the ground of the mosque and I'm photographing the Catholic cathedral right opposite. Now, it's interesting how Catholicism and Islam stand side by side in all the Islamic countries. And every time, I'm so surprised to see the cathedral and the mosque next to each other. You see, if you know the inside religion, behind the scenes, they're actually the same. So if I look at the symbolism on the outside of the Catholic cathedral, I have the symbol of the sun, because it was the symbol of the sun worship. And the cross, of course, the symbol also of the sun god. And there is the symbol of the sun. If I go across the street, and there is the great Abdullah Mosque, one of the finest, built by King Abdullah. On the gates, you have the symbols of the sun. Same symbolism, same religion. On top, of course, now, here you have the moon, the sickle moon, which the Catholic Church had on the clock. It was a symbol of Baal, or Baal. Inside this mosque, there are of course no pews, because in Islam you bow down and kneel on the floor, on the carpet. And if you look up at the tremendous dome, you have again the great solar blazes in this wonderful building. Islamic dress, well, you can look at old-fashioned Catholic nuns and you will find that the dress is identical. Catholic nuns wear the same dress as Islamic women of Orthodox faith. This is the great mosque in Damascus. Fascinatingly, inside the mosque, right inside, is the shrine, and there is a Muslim man praying at the shrine. Now, who's he praying to? Is it to Allah there? No. He's worshipping a relic of the dead. Because this is the shrine of none other than John the Baptist. Now, if you know something about Johann Sinaitis, we've spoken about that, then you can already pick up, if you pick up the name John, you have Johannsenism, then you have secret societies blended in the background. And they claim that this place has the head of John the Baptist. So an Islamic shrine in Damascus, this is, by the way, the oldest mosque, the most illustrious in that country, has this head. Fortunately, the Roman Catholic Church has a shrine with the arm of John the Baptist. I always say, if they carry on, they might be able to put him together again. I don't know. So, it is the same form behind the scenes. Inside the mosque, the women are not that important. They are relegated to the side. The men get the central positions. They are praying there with beads. In Catholicism, you pray with beads. You pray with rosaries. Now, which other religion has the priesthood just for men? The Roman Catholic Church is exactly the same. And here you have the same position in the Islamic world. The Islamic all-seeing eye, this is a very prominent structure that is used in all of Islam. And you will not find a taxi cab anywhere in Islamic countries that will not have the all-seeing eye there as a protection. Of course, it's used in Catholicism as well, and it's on the US dollar and all these interesting places. There's, of course, the Eye of Hathor, the Eye of Osiris, on an Egyptian temple. There it is, on a Roman Catholic pulpit. Another one on a Roman Catholic cathedral. Masonic author Carl Claudy writes, this is one of the oldest and most widespread symbols denoting God. We find it in Egypt, in India. The open eye of Egypt represents Osiris. In India, Shiva is represented by an eye. And the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry says, the all-seeing eye is an important symbol of the supreme being borrowed by Freemasonry from antiquity. On the same principle, the Egyptian represented Osiris. So, Islam uses the symbol, Catholicism uses the symbol. I'm just showing you some comparisons. To the ancient Egyptians, the right eye symbolized the sun, the left eye the moon. So there you have, again, the two aspects of the sun god. Bailey then goes on to mention, this is Alistair Bailey, that the eye of God is Shiva, or Shiva, the destroyer. Remember, Shiva is the Indian god, who is the equivalent of Osiris. Shiva is also a synonym for Satan. Is it possible that both religions in the inner circle worship the same Lucifer, but that the outer court knows nothing about this? Well, who is Baal? Encyclopedia of Freemasonry. Whenever the Israelites made one of their almost periodical deflections to idolatry, Baal seems to have been their favorite idol. In Tyre, Baal was the sun, Ashtoreth the moon, and so we have all the evidence that they know exactly what they're doing. There is no contradiction here, for Set is the Egyptian devil and Shiva is the Indian god of destruction. Both names, Set and Shiva, are listed in the Satanic Bible as another name for Satan. And Elena Petrovna Blavatsky affirms, now we have to remember that Shiva, Palestinian Baal, or Moloch, and Satan are identical. Is it possible that both religions serve the same master behind the scenes and that the masses are deceived, just like in Catholicism? Beautiful people who are kept ignorant. And the sincerity of the Muslim duped and misused because they are goyim, catechumens. Elena Petrovna Blavatsky links Set to Satan. Hermes, the god of wisdom, is called Tot, Tot, Set, Satan. All of these. Ancient Egypt, Satan, Set was worshipped under obscene homosexual rituals. And they had temples in which they had these homosexual rituals. For example, the Luxor Temple. I have them, but I won't show them. Now, this is an ancient pagan site, the Luxor Temple, one of the great relics of past times. Now, here we're going into the entrance, and oops, what's that? That's a mosque. Now, where's that mosque built? You don't mean the mosque is built into the Luxor Temple? Is that possible? Well, let's go a little bit closer. Yes, there it is. It's in the Luxor Temple. What does that tell you? If you had to build a Christian church today, would you go and choose the ancient pagan temple of Baal and build your church right in it? Yes or no? No, of course not. But what if the secret religion is really the same old ancient religion of Lucifer worship? Would you then perhaps do it? Perhaps, yes. So there they've done it. It's built into that temple. Amazing. On the ruins. Now let me take you to the temple of Baal, which is in another country, in Lebanon. And there it is. And on the Baal site, which is the same deity, by the way, what is that? That is a Roman Catholic place. A Roman Catholic church. On the same site. There is the cross. There is the temple of Baal. Why build it on the same site? Why have the same rituals? Catholicism does it. Islam does it. Do you think they have an agenda? And if we go into the great Catholic places, this is the place where Mary apparently ascended. Here is the great cathedral in Jerusalem. On the floor, you have the solar circle with all the signs of the zodiac, which, by the way, God forbids. God forbids. And this is the place where Mary lay, and then she ascended, of course, to heaven. She didn't stay dead there. On the floor, you have the pagan symbols. You have all of these interesting mitzvotoms and what have you, and the pentagrams, upside down pentagrams, all symbols of Lucifer. And then in the paintings, this interesting star. This is actually two squares, one inside the other. And that is how the pagan deities were represented very often. Either as triangles, one within the other, or as squares, one within the other. And the squares, one within the other, were often used for Isis and Osiris. There you see it in the Roman Catholic Church, dedicated to Mary. Also on the floor of that Roman Catholic Cathedral, you have the boat, you have the waves, the water, you have the P and the X. Remember that Morals and Dogma told us that that was the staff of Osiris. So that means it's actually a male phallic symbol, and the boat would be the womb. This is a very naughty picture in a nice setting. Nobody would know what that really means. Nobody would really guess that is an obscene picture. Unless you read what the Masons say about it. Now, isn't it interesting that the ship with its mast in the half moon was also the same depiction? So here is a Roman Catholic cathedral built like a Phoenician ship. Now, what has a Phoenician ship got to do with Roman Catholicism? Unless, of course, it is the womb. Now, let's ask Albert Pike to explain this to us. Albert Pike writes that Isis and Osiris, the active and passive principles of the universe, were commonly symbolized by the generative parts of man and woman. The Indian lignum was the union of both, as were the boat and mast, and the point within the circle, all of which express the same philosophical idea of the union of the two great causes of nature, blah, 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 blah. So, we're still on track here. We find this in the Roman Catholic Church. Inside this Knight's Temple, we've been there before, but I want to show you something else. Remember last time I showed you the double-headed eel? But I'm now going to point your attention to the floor. Oops, what is that? That's an eight-pointed star. Now, who does the star represent? Well, there's the star of Islam. Isn't that interesting? The two are identical. There's the star of Islam in various forms. So we find the star in Islam, we find it in the Catholic cathedrals, we find it specially dedicated to Mary, and we find it in the Islamic world. Now, how does this star come into existence? It's simply a square within a square, and there you have it. If you want to have the Star of David, you just take the triangle within the triangle, and you have it. There you go. It's a sex symbol. It's occult. It's very occult, in fact. So now, here's an interesting story of a man who claims to have been a Jesuit. His name is Alberto Rivera. And he claims that Cardinal Bear, the Jesuit general, personally instructed him on the origin of Islam. According to Rivera now, the Roman Catholic Church started Islam on purpose to take the Arabs under their control and to secure Jerusalem. Fascinating. This is, of course, highly ridiculed in the literature. Nothing like that ever happened. But let me digress and speculate a little bit. Who was first, Catholicism or Islam? Catholicism was first. And Catholicism had a major problem. You see, the Byzantine Church initially was on the side of Rome, no problem. In fact, the Byzantine Emperor elevated the Roman pontiff to his level of corrector of heresies of the entire world. So yes, the Byzantine Church and Rome were initially one. Only after about 1,000 years did a split come between the Orthodox and the Catholic Church. When the Orthodox Patriarch refused to accept and acknowledge the supremacy of the Bishop of Rome. And then war broke out between these two groups and has been waging since after the Russian Revolution. Now the Orthodox Church is saying, I'm sorry. So that's been resolved. But in the first few hundred years of Catholicism's rule, what was the main problem of Catholicism? Who was the problem? The true Christians. The true Christians, because Christianity had spread in the Middle East. Wouldn't it be nice if these supposed Christians of Rome could use an organization to eradicate Christianity and replace it with another form of their religion, front organizations? They're very good at it. You know, the Jesuits created who? Freemasonry to do the work. If something, they banned Freemasonry, and if something happens, they say, oh, it wasn't us, it was Freemasons. Isn't that right? Well, they blame the Jews. No, it's not us who rule the world, it's the Jews, it's them, it's Zionism. But in actual fact, it's Catholicism. Now, if the occult world wanted to gain control and the occult world controlled Rome, why not control all occultism? Wouldn't that be interesting? I'm just speculating. I can't prove this. I'm just saying that that's what Rivera said. Rivera said nobody believes him. So let's have a look at what happens. Fatima is a very interesting place because Islam controlled Spain and Portugal once upon a time. And the Pope is here in front of the statue of Fatima. There's the shrine, the Fatima link. A Vatican insider, Dr. Malachi Martin, has said that based on the message of Mary in a personal visitation, John Paul believes there will come a day when the heart of Islam, already attuned to the figures of Christ and of Christ's mother Mary, will receive the illumination. I like these words. You know, they sort of ring once you get to know them. It needs a second Fatima, in which they will recognize him as God's vicar on earth. So who must be recognized as God's vicar? The Pope must be recognized as God's vicar. Then, with fellow travelers like the Church of England, the Episcopal Church, and others of like mind, the Pope could be worshipped as the infallible Holy Father by over one half of the world's population. I'd like to correct him. All of the world's population. But that's beside the point. Now, early Islam. Which area did it occupy? This area. Who ruled over here? Who ruled there? Only Christianity. Before there was Islam, that is where Christianity was. And so Islam took hold of this area. Then, by AD 750, Islam progressed and took over all this, including Spain. That's fascinating. Spain And all this Asia Minor area was controlled by Islam. Did you know who ruled in Spain? It was the Visigoths. And the Visigoths had a different gospel to Catholicism. They were more in line with the Ostrogoths, who actually were Sabbath keepers. Problem people that had to get sorted out there maybe for a while. Just speculating. AD 900, there they go, withdrawing from the north of Spain. The Franks were very strong Catholic supporters. Slowly, slowly, Islam is moving out. And there, this whole area, controlled now by Islam. 1100, they're in the south of Spain. In the south, there's a group which is more independent than in the north. Tremendous battle, the Spanish area. Then they control this area, and AD 1500, they're out of Spain, the West, the Roman Empire is totally Catholic. This is Catholic, and Rome controls the Catholic world, and Islam controls this area. Today, this is the Islamic distribution, and there are two sects, the Sunni and the Shia, and they control vast areas, a huge area. But initially, where Christianity was, today, you can put Islam. Gary H. Carr, remember, speaks of the ancient mystery religion controlled by Freemasonry and the Illuminati and the World Council of Churches. Now, what if the true mystics behind the scene, the power mongers, are really in Rome, and that they control everything, including this other religion, through insiders? And then if you put all the pieces together with all the references that there are tremendous links between the Templars and the Islamic secret societies. The Ismailis, the Karmatites, the Fatimites, the Druzes, and the Assassins. Now the Assassins were interesting because they would kill themselves to gain an advantage. They could blow themselves up to destroy others. Do we have something like that today? Oh, yes. So nothing's changed. History is repeating itself. Now, who were these secret societies that were in cahoots with the Templars, or did the Templars control them? Who knows? Let's read about the Assassins. Degrees of the Assassins was thus as follows. First, there was the Grand Master, known as Sheikh al-Yabal, or Old Man of the Mountain. Second, the Dayal Kerbi, the Grand Priors. Third, the fully initiated Dayas. Fourth, the Rashids, the Associates. Fifth, the Fadais, Devoted. Sixth, the Lasiks, or Law Brothers. And lastly, the Common People, who were to be simply blind instruments. Does it sound familiar? The poor blind Goyim's catechumens. Designs against religion were, of course, not admitted by the order. Strict uniformity to Islam was demanded from all the lower rank of uninitiated, but the adept was taught to see through the deception of faith and works. So here we have a whole nation subject to these insiders using them as human cattle. Wouldn't you feel sorry for them, like we have to feel sorry for ourselves because we've been duped like that as well? Thus, by the lure of paradise, the assassins enlisted instruments for their criminal work and established a system of organized murder on the basis of religious fervor. Nothing is true and all is allowed was the ground of their secret doctrine. The Jesuits have the same doctrine today, which are ever being imparted but to a few and concealed under the veil of the utmost austere religionism and piety, restrained the mind under the yoke of blind obedience. Poor people, duped by satanic insiders. Now the Fatimites was another group that took over. The founder of the Fatimite dynasty of the Caliphs was Ubaidallah, known as Mahdi. Societies of wisdom were instituted in Cairo. Dar ul-Kimat, or the House of Knowledge, by the sixth Khalifa Hakim, who was raised to a deity after his death and is worshipped to this day by the Druzes. Under the direction of this man, the Grand Lodge of Cairo was formed by the Fatimites and continued the plan of Abdullah, and there were a number of degrees, 9 in all, their method of enlisting proselytes and systems of initiation, blah, blah, blah. are absolutely those which Weishaupt used for the Illuminati. So, you know, there's no difference between Rome and these folks. It's the same organization. Is it possible that they've used thesis and antithesis for thousands of years, if you like, to rub up the remnants of Christianity and opposition? And later, when the Orthodox Church split, what did they do? They created an empire called the Ottoman Empire, which went in and slaughtered the Serbs, who were Orthodox, and slaughtered the Romanians, who were Orthodox. They raped the women. They threw the children in the air. They caught them on the ends of their bayonets. They decimated whole Orthodox areas. Incredible. And what escaped to the north into Russia, it didn't escape the sword of communism, Lenin and his murderous band. There has been a religious war since Christ died. And who is being rubbed up? The souls of men. So here are the men of Islam. Who are these insiders? Who are these ayatollahs? Should the world be afraid? The world is meant to be afraid. Are you with me? So you have thesis, you have antithesis. In the world wars, they said communism is the threat. You are supposed to be afraid so that you will accept any changes that are necessary to meet the threat. Now, they're using this as the next threat to create the synthesis that they want. They're going to rub up two religions against each other. Christianity, Judeo-Christian culture, Islamic culture, rub them up and destroy each other until what is left? Synthesis. And then you have one world religion, and Lucifer rejoices because he's king. Isn't that what Albert Pike said, what he was going to do? Wow. So who are these so-called men of Islam? Well, I had this man down on the screen long before he was fingered as a 33-degree Freemason. I said he was going to be super terrorist number one, and they'll probably never catch him. They haven't got him today. Who knows if he's still alive? We'll talk about him tomorrow. The Bible is an indispensable part of the furniture of a Christian lodge. You remember this text? I showed it to you earlier. It comes from Morals and Dogma. Only because it is the sacred book of the Christian religion. The Hebrew Pentateuch in a Hebrew lodge and the Quran in a Mohammedan one belong on the altar. And one of these, and the square and the compass properly understood, are the great lights by which a Mason must walk and work. Which one? Obviously not the Bible, because Morals and Dogma itself says it hates that Bible. Didn't it say that? We read the quotes. And they changed it all. And the Hebrew Pentateuch, well, that is the Bible. So which one is left? Which one's left? By elimination, the Quran is left. Now, the Quran as such, or rightly understood? Probably rightly understood. Why? Because the Quran directly demotes Jesus Christ. It's the book that directly demotes Jesus Christ, whereas the others had to be modified to adjust to the insider to demote Jesus Christ. Are you with me? Now let's have a look at this. This gets fascinating. The deadly deception. James D. Shaw was a 33-degree Freemason, and he was at an interesting ceremony where a very high preacher, very prominent preacher, his first name's Billy, by the way, was also there at his initiation ceremony. But that's another story. 33rd degree, Knights Commander of Court of Honor, past Worshipful Master, Blue Lodge, past Master of all Scottish Rites bodies. That's what he was. He was a 33-degree Freemason. And he explained some of the rituals. The deadly deception, James D. Shaw, 33rd degree initiation ceremony, the oath is sealed by drinking wine out of a human skull. May this wine I now drink become a deadly poison to me, as the hemlock juice drunk by Socrates, should I ever knowingly or willfully violate the same. We've done this before. I'm just bringing it to perspective. A member dressed as a skeleton places his arms around the candidate, who then states, And may these cold arms forever encircle me, should I ever knowingly or willfully violate the same. So that's the 33 degree initiation ceremony. But there is another one. Each of us was presented, along with the Scottish Rite ring, a copy of Albert Pike's book, Morals and Dogma. So you get that when you get to the 33rd degree. We were told that it was the source book for Freemasonry and its meaning. We were also told that it must never leave our possessions, and that arrangements must be made so that upon our deaths it would be returned to the Scottish Rite. Fortunately, I didn't have to go through the process, but I have one. I have one. Very useful. Now, what's this got to do with Islam? Now, this is the highest degree of Freemasonry. What happens there? The deadly deception. The Scottish Rite includes 29 degrees beyond the Blue Lodge, culminating in the 32nd. The York Rite has the equivalent of 29 degrees of the Scottish Rite in advancement along the path that culminates in the degree Knights Templar. So the York Rite culminates at Knights Templar, and the other one is the 32nd degree in the Scottish Rite. Okay? In addition, the shrine. Ancient Arabic order, nobles of the mystic shrine, is available to 32nd degree Masons and Knights Templar who wish to participate. So the highest order is available, those the highest order, and become shriners. The ancient Arabic order, nobles of the mystic shrine, shrine the show army of Masonry, maintains a very high profile. It is necessary to be a 32nd degree Mason for 6 months before being eligible to join the shrine. Only the highest Freemasons may join the shrine. Now, these are most of the prominent Americans, by the way. All the big prominent Americans march through New York as the Shriners in their masquerades. Now, the shrine is in the name of Allah. Did you know that? So here are Christians, of so-called Christians of the 32nd degree, who now know already that they worship Lucifer, come to the shrine with a Quran on the altar. Now the Bible's gone. When you reach the highest level of Freemasonry and you become a Shriner, the Bible's gone. We sealed our solemn oath in the name of Allah, the God of the Arab, the Muslim, the Mohammedan, the God of our fathers. Wow. Is Allah the God of our fathers? Here's the oath. In willful violation whereof I incur the fearful penalty of having my eyeballs pierced to the center with three-edged blade, my feet flayed, and I be forced to walk the hot sands upon the sterile shores of the Red Sea until the flaming sun shall strike me with a livid plague. And may Allah, the God of Arab, Muslim, and Mohammedan, the God of our fathers, support me to the entire fulfillment of the same. Can a Christian make such an oath? Yes or no? Obviously not. So Masonry is nothing other than the ancient mystery religion, and Jesuits are the ancient mystery religion, and Islam is the ancient mystery religion behind the scenes. And who do you think controls it all? Rome. Rome controls it all. So how would you like it if I said that I believe that Islam and Catholicism behind the scenes is one and the same thing? Have you noticed that Catholicism never complains about Islam not allowing evangelism? Because it suits their purpose. It's already Catholicism.
Thank you. Amen.